A growing body of research reveals that postpartum depression isn't limited to depression, and it doesn't always occur postpartum. Mental illness in many different forms among new mothers is more common than previously thought. Pam Bellick, a health and science writer for the New York Times, wrote a two-part series for the newspaper called Mother's Mind. For it, she spoke with women who have experienced mental health issues during and after pregnancy, including Emily Guillermo, who has joined us now, along with Pam Bellick. We have links to both parts of the series on our show page. Part one, Thinking of Ways to Harm Her. Part two, After Baby, and Unraveling. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of you to our show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you so much.
Hi, Emily. Let's begin with Pam.
Hi, Emily.
Pam.
Hi, Pam.
How has postpartum depression been thought about in the past?
Yeah, I think in the past, and actually in the very recent past, it's had a very narrow definition. Experts have defined it as sort of emerging within a six-week window after delivery. And the symptoms have essentially been defined as depression, kind of major depression.
What got scientists thinking of, along the lines of perhaps other kinds of mental illness at different times?
I think they were seeing, doctors, pediatricians, obstetricians were seeing women present with much more complicated symptoms, and also, you know, not just within that six-week window. So what there has been some research now, there needs to be probably quite a bit more, that is showing that this can emerge any time within the first year and that it very often starts with during pregnancy.
How common are postpartum depression, anxiety, and other mood disorders?
So it's obviously a little hard to say, but the latest studies suggest that as many as one in five women could have, and we're talking sort of serious symptoms of either anxiety or OCD or bipolar or depression, sometimes a combination of those.
And even postpartum psychosis.
Yes. Now, postpartum psychosis is very rare, and it is different, and it needs to be distinguished from these other disorders because psychosis really suggests that a woman does not know that there's something wrong, and so it's something like one or two in 1,000 women mothers will experience psychosis, and a much smaller percentage of those will actually do some harm to themselves and their children. But most maternal mental illness presents itself more as these kind of anxiety and depressive disorders. And those are things where women know something is wrong with them and they can't figure out how to solve it.
Was it hard to find women who would speak openly about this? Because I'm assuming there's a fair amount of shame attached to postpartum depression.
You know,
and women worrying, what's wrong with me?
Yes, it did take quite a while, and Emily can speak to this. This has been an illness that has been, shrouded in shame and stigma for many, many years. And the women that I spoke with, I'm just so grateful to them, and our readers are so grateful to them for coming forward because they're showing a great deal of courage for being so open and openly identified as going through this experience.
And Emily, you were quite open about what happened to you. Was it painful to talk about?
Absolutely, yeah.
What was your experience after the birth of your second child? When did you realize you weren't feeling quite right?
The feelings actually started antenatal during my pregnancy, and they slowly progressed into something way more than what I ever expected after I had Benjamin. But I started to realize that things were truly wrong when he was about 4 months old.
And you hadn't had a similar experience with your first child?
Not at all, no. I had what I would say a perfect birth and pregnancy with my first child.
Is it common for mothers suffering from postpartum depression to have trouble bonding with their baby?
Yes, it is.
Emily can speak to that too. Yes, I think so. There are some studies now that have been tracking children of mothers with these illnesses and finding that it can affect their cognitive and their emotional development.
So, what was happening with you, Emily? Did you have any sense of why you weren't bonding with the baby?
I didn't understand what was going on with me, but I didn't understand it until much later. But I just knew that I wasn't, I didn't feel an attachment to him, and I didn't feel love towards him at all.
Is it difficult when you're in that situation to know whom to talk to and how to get to see a psychiatrist or some other therapist?
Yes, because like was mentioned, there's a lot of shame. I felt an intense amount of shame, deep shame. And I didn't seek help to see a psychiatrist, or I didn't really talk to my doctor about it. My husband was my main support. I talked to him mainly about it.
And how did he react to what you were saying?
To be honest, he was very shocked. He couldn't believe that I was saying I didn't love our baby. It really threw him off. He was, I guess the proper word would be horrified. He understood what I was saying, and he understood that I needed help. So he told me that he would love Benny enough for the both of us until I got proper treatment, and he knew that it would come.
Pam,
I didn't know that it would come.
What about for the baby who's not being bonded with? Do we know whether that has an impact later in life?
Well, as I was saying, you know, they're starting to look at this now and have found that there can be some effect on a child's emotional development, a child's cognitive achievement. These are very early studies, so of course we don't know. I think, you know, in Emily's case, she has worked so hard to not only get herself treated but successfully, but also she's working very hard to reestablish and cement bonds with Benjamin, and that's going to go a very, very long way.
And how old is Benjamin now, Emily?
He's almost two.
And a happy baby, I assume.
Well, he, from my own research that I've done on my own, I know that he has an attachment disorder. I feel that he has an insecure attachment. He is a happy baby, but he has some emotional problems going on now that we work on every single day, and we work towards a bond and trusting a lot now.
My guests are Emily Guillermo, who is one of the people that Pam Bellick has written about in a series of articles under the overall title Mother's Mind. The first one is Thinking of Ways to Harm Her. The second, After Baby and Unraveling. There's been much more attention paid to this issue in recent years. Do you think that it started when Tom Cruise told Oprah that Brooke Shields shouldn't have experienced postpartum depression because there was no such thing?
Well, I think Brooke Shields coming forward may have been the earliest celebrity. I'm not sure. There have been a few celebrities, Courtney Cox and Gwyneth Paltrow, who have also written years later, I believe, not while they were going through it, but have spoken years later about experiencing postpartum depression. And that has raised the profile of the issue. And, of course, these, you know, negative comments by Tom Cruise probably had that effect as well. But it's interesting that even though those cases have, you know, been written about in the celebrity world, I think for many, many women who are just, you know, average women going through this, it still has been an illness in the shadows. And I frankly have been just overwhelmed by the response that our stories have gotten with women contacting me and men contacting me about their wives' experiences.
We've heard about pediatricians being rather late to recognize autism until fairly recently. Has something similar been happening here?
Well, it's a very difficult screening for postpartum depression and for maternal mental illness, it kind of falls through the cracks.
There have been some laws passed, haven't there?
There have been some laws passed, and we can talk about that. One of the big issues is who is supposed to pick up on it. You know, if you think about it, if you don't have any red flags going into your pregnancy, is your obstetrician supposed to pick up on it? Is the hospital supposed to screen you? Is the pediatrician who sees you, you know, 2, 4, 8 weeks later supposed to pick up on this? These physicians have not been trained, for the most part, to make that a normal part of their job. So it really sort of relies on the woman and her family to try to recognize that something's wrong and go seek help.
And as we've heard from Emily, there's no way to predict who's at risk because she had a perfectly fine first child.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There are some risk factors that scientists know about now. For example, if a woman has had a previous depression earlier in life, or interestingly, if she has a immediate relative, say a mother or father with bipolar disorder, that seems to increase risk. Other than that, in many cases, like Emily's, there's no way to sort of see it coming.
So you had no warning, Emily?
But I think also another risk factor is having children so close in age, because my boys are only 11 months apart. So I had them very, very close. I didn't feel like my body had time to heal properly after having my first, because I got pregnant when he was 4 months old.
There are stresses that, you know, different kinds of external stresses, environmental stresses.
Well, everybody has sleep deprivation, for
example. Sleep deprivation, but, you know, if you're in a stressful financial situation, or if you had a stressful birth experience, if you had complications or needed to be on bed rest, you know, for some women, those things are easily absorbed, and for some reason, some women can be triggers.
Emily, did your doctors ask you any questions about your mental health? Were they looking out for it?
No, not at all.
So
I never got screening or questionnaire or anything like that.
Having a baby is usually seen as a joy and a blessing, and no one wants to admit that they have the desire to harm anyone, especially their own child. Can you talk about what it was like to have those negative thoughts toward your baby?
I don't think I could put into proper words what it's like.
Well, I'm sure it's still very painful to talk about. You don't have to go into great detail.
Yeah, it's horrifying, and it's unsettling to feel like you're out of control of your mind and your emotions. It's terrifying.
How long did this last?
I think about 6 months.
And as you said, the only person you really could turn to was your husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
Something else that I think is instructive about Emily's experience, we were talking about treatment. And, you know, she, with the help of her husband, did seek treatment. You know, she was very determined to try to get herself better. But it was a long process, wasn't it, Emily? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the different medications you needed to try?
Yeah, my doctor initially prescribed me an antidepressant, and I felt like that worsened my symptoms. And I went off of that, and I continued, and I thought there has to be one that will work for me. You know, there's something out there that can help me. So it actually took 3 different tries, and it was a combination of 2 that I felt really worked for me.
Some of the letters you got as a response to your articles, Pam, were from psychiatrists who felt that the drugs are not the best approach, that a talking cure is a better approach.
Well, I think that as with, you know, this is depression and these disorders, they're complex, obviously. In the general population, depression, I believe medication only works for about a third of people, and often you have to try multiple things.
And Emily says that the drugs actually exacerbated the situation.
For some women, they can. I think, you know, certainly in the my reporting said that just medication is hardly ever going to be enough. You're going to need to have some sort of support. For some people, talk therapy might be all that's needed. For some people, a support group for women with this issue may be all they need. It's really going to depend on what works for that particular woman, and there aren't any clear answers about that yet.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with Pam Bellick, who's a health and science writer for the New York Times. Her two-part series on Monday and Tuesday under the overall title Mother's Mind. The first one was Thinking of Ways to Harm Her. The second, After Baby and Unraveling. We have links to both of them on our show page at WNYC.org. Also with us is Emily Guillermo, one of the mothers who Pam has written about in the articles. We're back with Pam Bellick, a health and science writer for the New York Times, who has written a two-part series called Mother's Mind. The first is Thinking of Ways to Harm Her. The second, After Baby. We have links to both of them on our show page. And we're also joined by one of the mothers who participated in the creation of the articles, Emily Guillermo. Pam, you interviewed a woman named Jean Marie Johnson. What was her experience?
Yeah, so she, another very brave woman to tell her story, and she had no prior red flags or risk factors, and she gave birth to a daughter, Pearl, and almost instantly began to have just horrific visions of imagining herself doing terrible things to harm Pearl. Suffocating her or dropping her over onto a skating rink from a bridge in a mall. And these were terrifying to her, obviously, and she did not act on them. And it's important to note that most women, vast majority of women with these types of feelings and visions do not ever harm their baby.
But once in a while we do hear cases of when it does happen. Should we be sympathetic? Because these women feel driven by forces that they have no control over?
Well, I think these are illnesses, and to the extent that we have sympathy for people suffering from illnesses that are out of their control, it's really more about trying to find them help.
We have some people who've called in. Our number here, by the way, is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Nancy from Westchester, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to quickly tell the story of my sister. 35 years ago, she gave birth to her first child. She was the world's most cheerful person. And all of a sudden, she plummeted to a severe depression, which nobody even really recognized. And by 3 months, we thought she was going to leave the child, in a shopping mall or something. We didn't think she'd harm her, but we really thought she didn't care whether she lived or died. She went on antidepressants at 3 months. After the baby was 3 months, weaned her in a day. She just stopped breastfeeding in one day, which we thought would have horrible implications for the child. Turned out, it's a happy story because she went on to have 3 more kids. She's now the, grandmother, child, that 35-year-old is a neurologist with 2 of her own kids. Everything was fine, but it just was such a shock to us because no one had ever had anything like that. Because she did go on antidepressants for a time and got therapy and basically, snapped out of it. But it was a happy ending.
Well, thank you for calling us, Nancy.
Yeah, sure.
And
bye.
Pam, I wonder whether Nancy's story and Emily's story is typical, that we don't see this happening with each child. It just happens with one pregnancy.
I think there still needs to be a lot more learned about that. I have not found any research to sort of show definitively whether it's more likely to happen with a first child or subsequent children. That can really vary, and often that varies by the amount of stressful circumstances the woman is under.
Emily, what has been, what have you learned in speaking with other women who've been through similar problems? Emily, are you there? Well, actually, okay, well, no, I think Emily is there, but maybe she just got off the phone for a moment. We have another Emily, Emily from Fairlawn, New Jersey, on the line. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, so with my first daughter, who's now almost six, I had terrible postpartum anxiety where I would take her to the playground in Sunset Park and look at all the other little kids running around and just couldn't understand how they had survived their early childhood, because I was so convinced that she was going to die. And it wasn't until I was at a well visit with the pediatrician, who was a wonderful doctor in Park Slope, who she kind of, through her questions, you know, found out that I had been suffering like this. And she helped me find a psychiatrist and someone I could talk to who gave me some therapy, and that really helped. But then a few years later, I had spontaneous triplets, and I should have seen it coming, because triplets is, you know, three times the hormones, three times the risk. But I had terrible depression, and this time it was more of like an anger problem. And I reached out for help. I went to a psychiatrist, but whenever they would, you know, heard that I had triplets, he'd just throw a prescription at me with no follow up. And the drugs didn't let me sleep very well, so I would quit them. And it wasn't till now that my triplets are 3 years old that
we hear them in the background.
Yes, sorry. that I finally connected with a psychiatrist that walked me through the process of starting the antidepressants, the anti-anxiety drugs. I went to an outpatient program, and things have really turned around. So I try to be really open with my friends and other people that I meet about my experience, because I think it's terrible that there's such a stigma when so many moms I've talked to, you know, in kind of like hushed tones, will tell me their story, and especially moms of multiples or moms with kids close together, and there just doesn't need to be any stigma. You know, I really hope that people through this article and through other things learn that it is treatable, that you can overcome it, and that there's no shame, you know?
Thank you so much for calling us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We are talking with Pam Bellick of the New York Times. Also on the line with us is one of the women featured in her two-part series called Mother's Mind, Emily Guillermo. And Emily, I understand you're back. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Have you spoken to other mothers who've had similar experiences?
I have. I've spoken to many. I just attended a conference in North Carolina, Postpartum Support Internationals, and there was many, many survivors there that I spoke to.
And did that make it a little easier for you, knowing that there were other women who'd gone through similar experiences or different kinds of experiences, but in the end, all post or antepartum?
Yeah, absolutely. It helps to know that you're not alone.
Pam, the other caller, the other Emily, talked about the fear that her child was going to be harmed. You wrote about a woman named Cindy Wackenheim, and she was afraid that she was going to harm her child.
Cindy Wackenheim was convinced that she had harmed her child. And her case is, although we don't know exactly what her diagnosis was, it more closely resembles what we were talking about earlier, a kind of psychosis, in the sense that she did not realize that the issue was what was, you know, that her feelings were essentially delusional.
How did she feel she'd hurt her child? Because it got obsessive with her.
Yes. And this is another instance of a woman who had no risk factors. Nobody saw it coming. Very, you know, successful lawyer. Had a perfectly normal first few months with her son. And then when he was about 4 months old, she focused on an incident that happens to, you know, almost every mother, almost every child. She had left her child for half a second on a play mat on the floor. She'd briefly went to another room to change the laundry. And he was starting to push up, and he bumped his head. And she fixated on that issue and was convinced that because of her, you know, negligence, she had given him brain damage. And then she just kept seeing other things happening to him that she interpreted in that way as well.
What do scientists think is happening here? Is this a hormonal thing? Is it genetically, is there a genetic component? Do we see postpartum depression in different generations of the same family?
So as with most very, you know, complex illnesses, psychiatric or otherwise, the causes are going to end up being very complicated, and sort of they're going to be layers of them, and we don't know exactly, but it certainly seems to be related in some way to this sort of flush of hormones that happens during pregnancy. There's this buildup of hormones, and then there's kind of this flushing out when you deliver. But, of course, not every woman reacts that way to those hormonal surges. So there seems to be some genetic predisposition in women who do have this reaction. And as we were saying before, some women also just have either a genetic predisposition or sort of multiple other things going on in their lives that make it hard for them to sort of cope with all of this.
We have a doctor on the line who screens for postpartum depression. Okay. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you?
What do you want to tell us?
So I'm a family medicine physician. I did my residency at Columbia and did a lot of prenatal care and postpartum care there. And I just wanted to share that as a family doctor, we have a knowledge usually, not just the patient, but the family. A lot of my patients I took care of preconception, prenatal, and then postpartum, and also cared for their babies. So it was kind of from start to finish, and it was routinely, once that baby was born or even throughout the whole pregnancy, asking mom how she's doing, how she's adjusting, you know, kind of normalizing all the hormonal changes that can cause problems with mood and everything else that comes along with the pregnancy and postpartum when you have a new baby and you're not sleeping. And even now in my current practice, I'm no longer delivering babies, but I do see a lot of newborns and I see their parents, and it's the number one question I ask when the mom comes in with the newborn, even if it's not her visit, how are you doing? How are you managing with the changes? Any thoughts of hurting yourself? Any thoughts of hurting the baby?
Are they usually open with you about that?
Yes, they usually are. And when I was delivering babies, I did have several cases of postpartum depression. And I think another important aspect is having the resources to manage it. Where I used to work, we had social workers, we had therapists, we had psychiatrists, and getting the woman the help they need as soon as possible.
Well, Emily, you're in El Paso, Texas. Do you get the same kind of treatment?
No, not at all.
Have people you know read the articles, Pam's articles? Have you gotten any feedback?
No, not anyone I know personally besides a couple family members.
Pam, what I can see, the response to the articles has been many expressions of relief from women who said, oh, gee, it's not just me.
Absolutely. Relief and gratitude to women like Emily for coming forward. A sense that there needs to be a more concerted effort to try to change the system in a way that can, you know, help women get screened effectively and treated effectively.
And for the general public to be more aware of the fact that postpartum depression is a lot more common than we've imagined.
Right, and family members, too, to be able to recognize
to
it.
To be supported. Well, we have links to a number of support organizations on our show page, as well as links to your articles. So if people need any help, they can always go to WNYC.org and look at that. Are you going to follow up on this story?
I may. I have a few ideas that people have, that I either had beforehand or that people have written in about, saying, you know, you ought to look at this aspect and that aspect. Given the interest, I think we may end up doing a few more.
And Emily, congratulations on getting past it all. And let's hope everything works out with Benjamin.
I'm sure it will. He's a great kid.
And are you planning to have more children?
Yeah, my husband and I want a girl. So we have two boys now. So a girl would be awesome.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show, Emily Guillermo, who is one of the women that Pam Bellick has written about in the articles for the New York Times that appeared this week under the overall title Mother's Mind. The first one was Thinking of Ways to Harm Her. The second, After Baby, An Unraveling. It's been really informative, fascinating, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to more of the calls. A lot of people were calling in because we obviously are talking about something of great importance.
Well, thank you.